You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan, and on the Breakfast Grill this morning is His Excellency Dr. John Anton Subritzky, the New Zealand High Commissioner to Malaysia. Malaysia and New Zealand are celebrating the 60th anniversary of diplomatic relations. Welcome to BFM.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
I want to begin with a story that came out just maybe 10 days ago when your government announced that immigrants to New Zealand will need to meet a higher bar for residency to improve the quality of migrants. And I know, of course, many Malaysians have gone to New Zealand, see New Zealand as, you know, as greener pastures, land of milk and honey, perhaps. What is this new thinking by the New Zealand government in terms of immigration?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, firstly, we're addressing, I guess, to some extent, a new trend in New Zealand. We've obviously had, ever since our earliest times, a lot of people from around the world, originally from the British Isles, coming to settle and live in New Zealand. We've also exported a lot of New Zealanders too. New Zealanders are great for travelling, great for living overseas and so forth. But in the last few years in particular, we've had probably the strongest net migration to New Zealand in our history. So it's running at about 60 or 70,000 net each year. So this takes into account the people who are leaving too. So for a country of about 4.5 million people, that's actually quite high. And so the settings for our migration policy for bringing in people who can come and settle in New Zealand, always every government does sort of look at those and review those from time to time. And so I guess the government had a view that in order to meet the requirements in New Zealand, in order to particularly meet what we need by way of skilled migrants coming into New Zealand, because our unemployment rate is about 5%. It's actually quite low. So we have to be quite targeted about the type of migrants we come in. There are various streams that people will come in under to New Zealand, high net worth individuals, investors, and so forth. In terms of people coming in to live and work, I think what the government has done is wanting to focus a little bit more on those upper skilled areas, those areas where we do have skilled shortages, and make sure the other sort of people coming in from around the world. We have a very broad-based intake. Our biggest source countries for migration coming into New Zealand overall is China and India. So, about 4 out of 10 migrants to New Zealand, people coming to live, are from Asia. But there's also still a lot that come from other areas such as the UK, Australia, for instance. We have more Australians coming now to live and work in New Zealand than New Zealanders going to Australia. That's something else that's a relative change.
You know, this might strike Malaysians as curious. When you talk about the numbers that you have, your population's comparable to Singapore, the city-state, which is tiny. New Zealand has so much land. Why wouldn't you want to have a bigger population, create, you know, sort of in a domestic market through that? If there are problems with pressures on your infrastructure and social services, why not invest in those in order to accept more people?
Oh, we definitely do want to have people coming to New Zealand. I mean, this is the government grappling with what is a good thing, I mean, undoubtedly. But also we need to make sure that it is, I guess, streamlined to a degree, that we have a sort of consistent approach. And the thing is that when you have strong net migration coming into the country, it's not, I mean, you know, people can move relatively freely. I mean, in this day and age, people are pretty mobile, but you need to have increased capacity in your public hospitals. You need to have increased capacity in your schools and so forth. So I think definitely New Zealand is very much open for all visitors, whether they're tourists, whether they're people considering to come and work for a temporary period, for those that are considering coming to become a permanent resident.
And just give some numbers to what you're saying. Apparently a record 129,000 people moved to New Zealand in the first quarter of this year. And that coincided with the lowest number of New Zealanders relocating abroad in 30 years. Is there a reason why New Zealand citizens don't want to leave or not leaving?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, you can't really answer that, I mean, in terms of what people are thinking or they're doing. I guess one obvious thing is New Zealand, particularly over the last 10 years or so, the New Zealand economy has done very well. We're one of the strongest growing economies, developed economies in the OECD. It's usually been running at about 3 or 3.5%, which for a developed economy is quite high, particularly at this time. Our government, our government accounts, our budget is back in surplus, which is very rare again for economies these days. So I think there's a very strong economic success story where the world is literally coming to New Zealand. Our tourism growth is double figures for quite some time now, and I guess people see a lot of opportunity staying and remaining in New Zealand.
Just to get a little bit granular on this new policy, apparently there's a salary threshold, and I believe that the Business New Zealand lobby said that this is important because this undercuts the possibility of migrants, being paid less than locals, and therefore, you know, creating a situation where perhaps migrants become preferred workers and keeping your... But you said unemployment rates are reasonably low. It's 5%, you said.
Yes. I mean, unemployment rate overall is quite low. That doesn't mean that there are certain skills shortages in some areas. And like you alluded to, there is a challenge there with this success story of more and more people coming to New Zealand to visit, to work, to be a tourist and so forth, that we're continually investing in our infrastructure in that. So that requires certain skills immediately. So, I would see this as, you know, an ongoing review that governments will always do from time to time just to make sure that the immigration settings are fit for purpose and are doing what we want them to do.
The Malaysian part of the story is that more Malaysians are coming to New Zealand, some 33% increase in the figure of Malaysian arrivals from 2015 to last year, 2016, when we had the figures. The question is, you know, does the New Zealand government see Malaysians as desirable migrants? And what would constitute a desirable migrant? This would be for anybody aspiring to move down south.
The figures are actually the very recent figures are even stronger. I mean, we had over 50,000 Malaysian visitors last year. And that year on year is something like a 50% increase. Now, many of those would be tourists, and that's partly because we've got better air connections now between Kuala Lumpur and Auckland. So we very much welcome all Malaysian visitors to New Zealand. We have a lot of tourists. We also have a lot of students that come to New Zealand. We've had Malaysian students in New Zealand since the early 1950s. Now, getting more specifically to your question, in terms of Malaysian migrants coming out to New Zealand, we run a point system overall, so that applies to all countries in the world. I think Malaysians are very well situated for being migrants if they wish to come to New Zealand because we have a lot of shared history. And we mentioned about the 60th anniversary of diplomatic relations. The two countries know each other very well. My time, I've been here for just over 2 years, and one of the things that's come out very clear to me is that, you know, Malaysians and New Zealanders get along. I mean, we've got a sense of humour. We interact very easily. Malaysian students I know that have come and lived in New Zealand, and many of them have actually worked in New Zealand for a year or so before returning to Malaysia, or most of them were returned to Malaysia, have very good experiences in New Zealand. So I'm sure that Malaysians, whether they're tourists, whether they're people looking to work, whether they're just going to New Zealand just to sort of check things out a wee bit, will have a good time.
Well, I understand that 5% of all international students to New Zealand come from Malaysia. So that's a small percentage. In absolute figures, something like 2,000 Malaysian students every year. But there has been, according to the numbers I have, a drop in Malaysian student enrollment. Is there a reason? Would that be correct? And if it is, there a reason for that drop in enrollment?
There has been, although the very latest figures are sort of showing up, sort of going up a little bit again. I'm not quite sure about what the dynamic is with that. I think, you know, partly it's the government-sponsored programs. I mean, you know, the amount of students that get sponsored and receive government scholarships to go to overseas for studies. So I think you'll find that the Malaysian students that are going overseas to certain countries around the world, that's probably decreased a wee bit over time. Increasingly, a number of Malaysian students stay at home. I mean, there are now overseas universities, if they wish to have an overseas degree, a foreign university degree, often they can do that here in Malaysia. That's a relatively new thing. So there may be a number of elements to that.
Well, you know, about a year ago, the New Zealand Herald ran a story that Malaysians living in New Zealand could be barred from travelling overseas for up to 3 years if they discredit or ridicule their own government. So this is Malaysians living in New Zealand and getting involved in politics in some respects. How do New Zealanders, whether it's a government or society, view this? They have people coming from authoritarian or third world countries. They are providing infrastructure that is based on some democratic premises. How do you square that circle?
I only can give the New Zealand perspective on this, and in New Zealand, at the universities, they very much guard the freedom of speech. I mean, the ability of students to say and do what they like and what they think.
So are they concerned about the long hand of government? I'm not talking just about Malaysia, but I'm thinking of also students coming from China, for instance. They have a fairly authoritarian government that is also very concerned about its public image of its citizens in foreign countries. Yeah. I mean, are you concerned about the long hand of these foreign governments in your own country?
To be honest, I have not come across any incidents where this has been a problem.
Okay. I want to also ask you very quickly about how foreigners who have migrated, settled there, taken up citizenship in New Zealand, deal with the kind of racial dynamics there. Because we, of course, have people, you know, we have our own ethnic politics. There's identity politics in New Zealand as well between the majority white Pakeha community and the Maori, which is the native population. How do foreigners fit into that dynamic, which actually shaped a lot of post-war New Zealand history?
I think the first thing is that New Zealand is and has been for a long time a multicultural nation. The Maori in New Zealand are the original settlers of New Zealand. A lot of our particular and special cultural identity comes from Maori traditions and Maori culture. The intrinsic fabric of the country is that dynamic between, I guess, the original settlers and the European settlers and the Maori people. And then increasingly over the years, you've had people from other countries from around the world that have come to New Zealand to live and to work. So our nation at the moment, the demographic breakdown is roughly, we've got about 65% are European, 15% are Maori, 10% are Asian. 1 in 8 people who live in Auckland are from Asia.
So they're catching up with the Maori population and maybe will supersede them.
Yeah. Well, I can't sort of predict the future, but we've got a growing and strong Asia population in New Zealand, and also 6 or 7%, or roughly 6 or 7%, are Pacifica, from the Pacific Islands. Auckland is the biggest Pacifica city in the world. So we've lived a long time with ethnic diversity. I think we've got a great base in terms of the relationship between the Europeans, what we call Pakeha, and Maori. Now, there are always challenges, there are always issues, but I think New Zealand has come a long way over the years in addressing cultural difference and also in regard to Maori, addressing some of those grievances from the past. We're not perfect, but we've worked hard at it, and I think we've got a very good story to tell.
I'm speaking to His Excellency Dr. John Anton Subritsky, New Zealand High Commissioner to Malaysia. Next up, we talk about the headwinds facing the economy, the global economy, and how New Zealand intends to negotiate that. I'm Sharad Kutin, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you've just joined us. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, His Excellency Dr. John Anton Subritsky, New Zealand High Commissioner to Malaysia. We ended up talking about identity politics. Some people have had some tweets. Amril Malik asked, how fair is the Treaty of Waitangi on Maori? It's a conversation that's perhaps too involved for us to get into this morning, but thank you so much, Amri, for that question. I want to go to the issue of trade. Malaysian firm, a private equity firm, Navis Capital has agreed to buy New Zealand's mainland poultry. This deal is subjected to approval by New Zealand's Overseas Investment Office. The terms of the deal have not been disclosed. We just got this news. I want to ask you about foreign investments and how actively is New Zealand courting Malaysian investors?
Well, certainly, I mean, we welcome investment from all over the world. One of the areas that we're putting particular emphasis on and where I think Malaysia would be very interested in Malaysia interest is actually in our tourism sector. As I mentioned to you a bit earlier, our tourism is growing very strongly. I mean, it's been growing at about anywhere from 12 to 15% year on year. We get almost now, I think, 4 million tourists to New Zealand every year. So that's approaching the overall size of the population. And so the government last year did a study on this, and basically that study concluded that in order to keep up with current demand as it's scheduled to continue, we'll need to build something like 26 more hotels in the country over the next 10 years. And that's over and above the hotels that have already been planned for. So this is an area where, you know, I've been, obviously live here in KL, I've been around Malaysia, you have some wonderful hotels here. And so that's an area where we definitely would be interested in Malaysian investment.
In the global M&A story, in the global mergers and acquisitions story, there's always been, there have been some sticking points. One of them is because China and China buying into strategic assets. Does New Zealand have concerns about China's growing influence, not just militarily, in geostrategic terms, but also in terms of the kinds of investments Chinese interests are buying up in your country?
Well, I mean, New Zealand has a very good, strong and positive relationship with China. New Zealand was the first developed a country to negotiate an FTA with China. It's produced enormous dividends for both countries. To give you an idea, over the last 8 to 9 years, our exports to China have gone up from $2 billion to $10 billion a year. The number of Chinese visitors or tourists in New Zealand have gone up from 100,000 a year to 400,000 a year, second biggest tourist market now in the country after Australia, our second biggest trading partner just after Australia. And we also welcome Chinese investment. We apply the same investment rules to all countries or people or organisations from all countries. We don't discriminate. Like all countries, we want and try and attract investment in certain areas. But, you know, investors are extremely welcome. We do have some areas where we basically say that if you want to invest in this area, and the obvious one is if you're a foreigner or a foreign organisation that wants to buy rural land, So rural property, rural land in New Zealand, farms and so forth, then you have to go through a certain process. You have to get certain approval for that. And one of those thresholds that you have to meet as a overseas investor is to show, okay, you want to invest in this area, you want to buy this certain amount of land in that. What are you going to bring as part of your investment that is beyond what we would be able to do with that land ourselves as New Zealanders or a New Zealand organisation? And this is just a common thing that most countries do. You want to optimise these things for the benefit of your country and its people.
Just to clue everybody in, Malaysia and New Zealand have a free trade agreement. It was signed in October 2009, set in force in August 2010. Also, the countries are linked through the ASEAN-Australia-New Zealand Free Trade Agreement, which entered into force in January 2010. I did want to ask you about what is called the New Zealand Inc. ASEAN strategy. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, the thing is, I mean, just to get to, I guess, the foundation point, New Zealand is a strong and has been for a long time a strong supporter of ASEAN. We are one of the oldest dialogue partners of ASEAN. In 2015, my first year that I was here, we celebrated the 40th anniversary of that dialogue relationship. There was a summit between the New Zealand Prime Minister and all the ASEAN leaders, co-chaired by our Prime Minister, with Prime Minister Najib. So ASEAN is extremely, extremely important for us. So in terms of those free trade agreements that you're talking about, we're very fortunate that in terms of our companies and our exporters to Malaysia, they can trade either under the bilateral FTA or they can trade under the ASEAN-Australia-New Zealand FTA. And both of them are very high-quality trade agreements.
Speaking of multilateral trade architecture, the end of the TPP, how does New Zealand view that? And do they see the Chinese-led Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP, as a replacement, as something that they welcome?
Well, we don't. I mean, the RCEP and the TPP are not mutually exclusive.
But TPP is essentially dead in the water.
Well, no, I wouldn't agree with that. I think, you know, obviously we've had the decision of the current administration. But look, this TPP was negotiated over, I think, almost 10 years. I think the vision of a Trans-Pacific trade arrangement, trade integration that stretches from East Asia and Southeast Asia to North and South America is a good one. There are still 11 other countries that are part of that TPP arrangement. And I think what we need to do is for officials, and I'm not a trade expert, but officials, the trade officials, to actually look and see, okay, this has happened. What are the possibilities? What are the possible options that are out there? And like good officials, they have to put up that advice to ministers, so ministers actually have options before them.
When I think of New Zealand, I think of, well, not just Lord of the Rings, but I think of green pastures, I think of incredible scenery, I think of a population or culture attentive to its environment. And I want to ask you a question regarding that. I remember in the 80s, you had a Prime Minister, Lange, who was very strong on his anti-nuclear position. It seemed to be a fairly independent, fairly set him apart from the pack, as it were, in the Pacific on what was happening then. Today, we know that New Zealand has ratified the Paris Agreement, but we also have a turn in terms of leadership on climate change with the Trump administration turning its back on climate change and efforts. How does New Zealand negotiate this changing with a huge superpower like America turning its back on climate change talks and China trying to kind of come into that vacuum and provide leadership?
Well, I mean, fundamentally, I don't think New Zealand's policy settings are going to change. Obviously, in terms of our international relationships, you know, we engage with a number of different countries, not just China and the United States. But we pride ourselves on having an independent foreign policy. We will interact with other countries. We will interact with various international organizations according to what we believe is best in New Zealand interests and so forth. And, you know, with both China and the United States, there are many things that we agree with those countries, and there'll be some times we disagree. So we just we carry out according to what our interests are.
Spoken like a diplomat. I want to get to the question of the 60th anniversary of diplomatic relations between our two countries. Is there something special happening?
Well, I think this year is a special. I mean, us diplomats, we do like anniversaries. I mean, just like individuals and couples like anniversaries, it's a time to reflect and celebrate the past and also think about where we're going in the future. The Malaysia relationship is very important for New Zealand. It's one of our oldest in Southeast Asia. And one of the first points to say is it actually goes back even longer than 60 years. The first New Zealand soldiers came to Malaysia or Malaya in 1949 to assist in the emergency period. The first Malaysian students started coming to New Zealand under the Colombo Plan in the early 1950s. So it goes back even further than 1957. And also another aspect that's really strong with the relationship, which we've alluded to earlier, is that, you know, in today's age in particular, relationships between countries are more than just relationships between governments. Our governments do get on very well and liaise and collaborate on so many things. But it's also important about people. And as I said, we have strong numbers of Malaysian students over many years that have studied in New Zealand. We have great tourist flows between both countries and that. So the people-to-people relationship is very strong.
Do you see any headwinds in that relationship? Any bumps, any hurdles, things that could be done better?
Well, certainly, I think, certainly in terms of problems and issues, no. we see, because the other point I was going to make is that I think we see the world in a similar way. We both believe, in particular, I think I'm saying this correctly about Malaysia, but certainly for New Zealand, in a rules-based international system. So we see the world in a similar way. Part of the 60th anniversary is for us to look and see, well, are there some things that we can do more and do better? Our trade between the countries is still very much dominated in a fairly narrow range of commodities. So one of the things that I want to do this year is to sort of look at what the opportunities are for collaboration in different areas, in new areas.
Thank you very much for joining us. I've been talking to His Excellency Dr. John Anton Subritzky, New Zealand High Commissioner to Malaysia. I'm Sharad Kutin, and you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.